Coming to you from the mountains and the plains, the only conservative voices brave enough to push back. This is the Conservative Daily Podcast with Joe Altman.
That's what the Second Amendment was designed to do. If you're going to do something to nullify or take away my rights under the Constitution, come get it.
Max McGuire.
When you look at politicians on the left, they need to convince people that they are victims.
A resistance to the resistance.
And now your hosts, Joe Altman and Max McGuire.
And welcome back to another edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. My name is Max McGuire. Happy Monday, everyone. Lots going on over the last couple days, and we're going to talk about it today. Today is the first time we're going to start rolling out our two-hour format, which is we're going live at a normal hour, and we'll stay live for a second hour. And we're going to try this a number of different ways as we figure out how it works best. Some days we might reserve the second hour just for call-ins. Some days, like today, we'll do it 1 hour for one topic, another hour for another topic. Still connected, but just two different topics. So just bear with us as we have the growing pains and try and work out the best way to use this two-hour format. But a lot's happened in the last 96 hours. President of the United States has been banned from Twitter for saying that he won't go to the inauguration. That apparently counts as violence. Rudy Giuliani was banned from Twitter for saying that patriots gathered on January 6th. That's apparently a no-no. So we are going to have to go to great lengths to make sure we do not say anything that can even be construed as encouraging violence, which we don't. We don't encourage violence. But the fact that the president of the United States, sitting president of the United States, can be deplatformed for saying that he won't go to the inauguration when just 4 years ago, countless Democrats announced the same thing and they were applauded, it's a big deal. So we're not going to talk about the issues that will get us banned, but there's lots still to talk about in the news happening. So the 2 hours today are going to be dedicated to two topics that work together but deserve an hour themselves. The first, we're going to be talking about insurrection. What is it? How the left is going out of their way to call what happened on January 6th an insurrection. And we're going to go through three specific instances of insurrection in U.S. history. The first will be the Shays Rebellion. The next one will be the Whiskey Rebellion. And then we'll talk about the Bonus Army, the Bonus Expeditionary Force of 1932, in which tens of thousands of unemployed, out-of-work military veterans stormed the Capitol building. So we're going to be talking about all three of those. In the second hour, we're going to start talking about deplatforming, because deplatforming is how the left and their tech allies are going about punishing anyone who even remotely believed that the election was fraudulent. So those are the 2 hours. So first, we're going to start with the insurrection. And as I was trying to go through how to define insurrection, I was watching Tucker Carlson, and I realized that he actually already did it for us. He covered a CNN segment where they went right to Merriam-Webster's dictionary. So, Mr. Producer, let's go ahead and play the CNN cut.
Then there was that stream of consciousness part, the part where the boss was breathing so heavily it was hard to make out the words. There was white supremacy, insurrection, domestic terrorism, something like that. She tries to connect the dots. It's confusing, but she's pretty sure the word insurrection was in there, for sure. Someone insurrected, maybe, or acted insurrectingly, something like that. No, it was definitely insurrection. So she decides to look up the word in the dictionary to see what it means. Here's what happened next.
It was an insurrection. Take Merriam-Webster's word for it. Insurrection, an act or instance of revolting against civil authority or an established government, knocking down barriers, knocking down gates, pushing police out of the way. Police would be the civil authority as described in the definition of insurrection. They broke windows and doors. They vandalized offices.
So that's the definition of insurrection, right? Using force to try and topple or disrupt a government, which is very strange to me. Mr. Producer, go to my screen, because you would think that the left would have defined insurrection when it was happening in Portland over the summer. That is a picture of a federal agent having to respond to explosives being hurled at him by protesters. He was defending a federal courthouse in Portland, and he was having to deal with explosives. They were throwing explosive devices. As we talked about at the time, that's the National Firearms Act. The same law that governs machine guns and rocket launchers also governed the illegal use of explosives that they use there as weapons. But that wasn't insurrection. That was just a peaceful protest. And anytime anyone tried to say that that was violent, they were smacked down. Leftist politicians, even the mayor of Portland, went there while they were throwing explosives at federal officers. But that wasn't insurrection. That was a peaceful protest. Then we saw this. Remember this? The big protest in front of the White House where Donald Trump had to be rushed down to a bunker because they were afraid the angry mob of BLMers and Antifa people were going to rush the gate. That was called a protest. But they also threw explosives in the direction of the White House. They threw explosive devices. But that wasn't an insurrection. That was a protest. And I'm just reminded, if you remember at the time, they made fun of Donald Trump because the Secret Service briefly brought him to the bunker. And they said, oh, well, that was stupid. It was a peaceful protest. It wasn't. They had broken through multiple security lines, multiple police lines, and were right up against the fence. It was just the officers, the fence, and the White House. So they had to evacuate Trump briefly to the bunker, and people made fun of him, calling him Bunker Boy. But that wasn't an insurrection. That was just a peaceful protest. They said he was afraid of a protest, even though they were using explosives. And I'll fast forward to just over the weekend. This is Sophia Bush. She's an activist. She's now calling for Lauren Boebert, the congresswoman from Colorado who carries a gun. She wants her to be kicked out of Congress. Why? Because Congresswoman Boebert tweeted that Nancy Pelosi had been removed from the chamber. She did that on January 6th. She updated people that Pelosi was no longer in the chambers. And the left is claiming that simply by telling people where Pelosi wasn't was an attempt to help the mob, to help the people storming the Capitol. That's the left's argument. So when Trump went to a bunker, he's an idiot bunker boy who's afraid of peaceful protesters. They weren't peaceful. But when Boebert just tweets that she's no longer in the chambers, that's an attempt to aid in her execution, apparently. It's so strange. All this is very, very strange. And real quick, just go back to my screen, Mr. Producer. This is a video. Everyone remembers this. We covered this at the time. This is the video from Portland of them trying to burn down the courthouse after they had barricaded federal officers inside. Now ask yourself, does that meet the definition? I'm going to take that down now. Does that meet the definition of trying to use force to interrupt the government in its official duties or to stop the government from carrying out its duties? Yes. If you're calling a few dozen people rushing the Capitol building, in which we've seen a lot of videos of police officers letting them in. Now, whether they just let them in or they just didn't want to put up a fight, I don't know. But if that's insurrection, then the summer of love that was described by Democrats all summer of the mostly peaceful but fiery protests absolutely qualifies as insurrection. So we're going to talk about three different examples of insurrection from American history. And I want to explain this, and I'll explain it to the end. There's three main reasons I'm telling you this. But before we go anywhere, I want to start with the first one. The first one was a rebellion known as Shays' Rebellion. Now, anyone who remembers U.S. history, anyone who took AP U.S. history will remember this. This gets taught. Mr. Producer, go ahead and put up image number one. So Shays' Rebellion took place in Western Massachusetts, and it was led by a man named Daniel Shays. Daniel Shays, let's put up image two. Daniel Shays was a American Revolutionary War veteran who was actually injured in the American Revolution and forced to retire before it was over. When he got back home, he was immediately basically put into collections. So, oh, thank you so much for fighting for the independence of our country. You owe all these people money. You're being taken to court for the money. He couldn't pay it, right? There was a Revolutionary War going on. He was immediately put into collections. So I just want to explain that so we understand why he did what he did. Let's go back to image number one. In order to pay for the American Revolutionary War debts that the young American government, then under the Articles of Confederation, had amassed, they started levying new taxes. And you need to understand that in the period after the American Revolution, everyone was in debt. As I just mentioned, keep that up. We can keep that up. Daniel Shays was in debt. individuals were in debt because they were no longer providing for their family. They were off fighting a war. So the soldiers, the militiamen were in debt. The businessmen were in debt. The government was in debt. After the war, all of those debts started getting called in. And it all kind of got put onto the shoulders of the lower class working man. We can go take that off the screen. That is a picture of what apparently happened in Western Massachusetts when they started trying to collect those debts. They're attacking the debt collectors. So the businessmen all wanted the lower class, the working men, to pay their debts. The government levied new taxes on businessmen, on tradesmen, to try and pay the debts. And the government promised that, hey, we're levying these taxes so we can pay the soldiers. Well, if you tax the soldiers after they've returned home, and then you say, oh, well, we're using the tax we're taking from you to pay you, the amount that they were going to be paid was never equal or more than the amount they were being taxed. So people started getting very, very pissed off. And understandably, they just fought in a revolutionary war. And before they'd even had a chance to unpack when they got home, they were being served with debt collection and being told that there were new taxes being levied against them. So Daniel Shays basically brought together all the people who were pissed off and decided to attack the federal armory. Let's go ahead and put up image number three. This is a depiction of Federal Shays and his angry rebels attacking the federal armory, trying to get federal weapons to then wage a bigger revolution against the post-revolutionary Articles of Confederation government. So that's the depiction. And Shays' rebellion is important because it illustrated the main problems that existed with the Articles of Confederation, meaning it was a loose connection of independent states. The federal government had very little power. So when the federal government tried to rally troops to put down the rebellion, they couldn't. And when the states tried to rally troops to put down the rebellion, they didn't have the money. So it actually, most of the effort to put down the rebellion fell on those same private businessmen that were putting everyone into collections. They put together a private militia force. Let's go ahead and put up image four. So the private militia force, paid for by private business and some state funds, was able to put down Shays' rebellion. Now, that doesn't mean that what Daniel Shays did was good. It wasn't right. But it also doesn't discount the grievances that he felt were being levied against him, right? He had a right to be angry. He fought for this country. He was wounded. And when he got home, he was put into collections. It was that way with everyone. And they weren't getting paid for their militia or their army service. So what happened after Shays' rebellion? This is going to be something that's going to come up a couple times. What happened after Shays' rebellion? Well, put up image five. Image five, Shays and the rebels were pardoned. The governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I always laugh when you read these things, the S's were F's, I always laugh about that. James Bowdoin, I probably mispronounced that, the governor of Massachusetts decided to pardon them and said, listen, what you did was wrong, obviously, but in the spirit of reconciliation, we're going to pardon you. I'm going to pardon you. So they got pardoned. And it showed the weak Articles of Confederation government that they were not equipped to deal with a few angry farmers, let alone a foreign power. So that was one of the driving forces that led the Articles of Confederation government into reforming under the current constitution that we have. So that was Shays' rebellion. Farmers feeling like they had nothing to lose because everything was being taken from them, deciding to fight back for what they believe was rightfully theirs. Fast forward a bit, and you get to the Whiskey Rebellion. Mr. Producer, go ahead and put up image six. In order to understand the Whiskey Rebellion, you need to understand why people in the colonies were making whiskey. Yes, farmers were making whiskey because, yeah, they like to drink. That's a given, right? No one's denying that one. But one of the reasons that in 1891, so many farmers were creating whiskey is you look at that picture. That is how farmers would get their goods to market. Now look at that covered wagon. Imagine putting a bunch of grain in that wagon. Imagine how hard it would be to transport a bunch of grain over untamed wilderness. You look at that yard, there's still stumps in it. That's how undeveloped this territory in Western Pennsylvania, Western Massachusetts was. So they said, listen, it's not feasible just to transport a bunch of processed grain. We're going to make whiskey instead, because whiskey, instead of it being loose grain, is a liquid that you can put in barrels like you see on that picture and more easily transport. So the farmers, obviously, they'd sell the grain locally and as much as they needed to, but they also would distill their grain down into whiskey. I'm going to take that off the screen. At the time, whiskey became a form of currency. Whiskey became a form of currency because remember, 1891, we're only a couple years removed from the Constitutional Convention, the Constitution being ratified. The American dollar wasn't necessarily strong, wasn't necessarily trusted. So people were often buying and selling things in whiskey. Often buying and selling things in whiskey. So what happened in 1891, anyone who's seen the musical Hamilton, in 1891, Alexander Hamilton said, okay, we need to figure out a way to pay our war debts. When the federal government basically took on all the state debt, by 1791, the federal government had amassed over $75 million in debt, which in today's currency, roughly $4 trillion. Yeah, it's a lot of money for a country that's just starting out. So Alexander Hamilton decided he was going to create new taxes to pay off that debt. If you anyone who studied history knows that when the Constitution was finally signed, Benjamin Franklin was outside and people asked him, what kind of government do we have? Do we have a democracy? Do we have a monarchy? And Benjamin Franklin famously said, you have a republic if you can keep it. Well, Alexander Hamilton was tasked with finding a way to afford it. So Alexander Hamilton levied what was known as an excise tax on whiskey, distilled spirits, rum, all different types of things. That excise tax hit these farmers in Western Pennsylvania very, very hard. Very, very hard. So look at it this way. If you were a big time distiller, instead of paying by the gallon, you got to pay a flat fee. You'd pay your flat fee. And it ended up working out to about 6 cents a gallon of low proof whiskey. 6 cents a gallon. But if you were one of these farmers struggling to get by, literally paying your workers in whiskey because the dollar is non-existent, you had to pay between 9 cents a gallon, 25 cents a gallon, as high as 40 cents a gallon. So here, instead of thinking, okay, we're going to distill this whiskey and it's going to make it easier to bring it to market, they're being told by the federal government, okay, every time if you want to make high proof whiskey, you have to pay between 25 cents and 40 cents per gallon of high proof distilled spirits. And just to put it in perspective, at the time, a worker in this area of the country in Western Pennsylvania would be lucky to make 25 cents a day. Alexander Hamilton was levying a tax on these people. Every 1 gallon of high proof distilled liquor was equal to a day's wage. So yes, the Whiskey Rebellion, people got really pissed off. Got very, very pissed off. When the tax collectors first started coming to try and collect the tax, the first one who did it was tarred and feathered. I kid you not. He was tarred and feathered. Mr. Producer, go ahead and put up image 7. This is a depiction. Remember, there's no cameras there. They tarred and feathered the tax collector. So then the federal government brings in a U.S. Marshal. And the rebels, at that time they're rebels, chase the U.S. Marshal out, run him into a general's home, start opening fire on the home. They retreat for a day. The next day, the general in the home had called up 10 soldiers as reinforcements. The rebels had grown from 60 to 300. A battle ensues. They burn down the house. They burn down the house. It's not a joke. They burn down the house. In response, President George Washington led a force of 13,000 soldiers. Put up image 8. He led a force of 13,000 soldiers to march on Western Pennsylvania to put down the insurrection. And obviously the rebels, seeing this, they fled. Right? It was very hard to convict them because a lot of it was hearsay, a lot of it was witness testimony who then recanted. But two men ended up actually being convicted. Two men. What did George Washington do? Did he put them to death? Because they were convicted to hang. They were sentenced to hang. What did George Washington do? No, he did not let them hang. He pardoned them. Put up image 9. This is Washington's pardoning message that he delivered in a message to Congress. The misled have abandoned their efforts, for though I shall always think it a sacred duty to exercise with firmness and energy the constitutional powers with which I invested, yet it appears to me no less consistent with the public good that it is with my personal feelings to mingle in the operations of government every degree of moderation and tenderness which the national justice, dignity, and safety may permit. He pardoned them. Instead of hanging them, He pardoned them in the interest of bringing the country together. They burned down a general's home, tarred and feathered tax collectors, shot and killed at least one U.S. Army soldier. Literally opened fire on American troops. And he pardoned them in the interest of bringing the country together. The last one we'll get to, and Joe just stepped into the studio, so we're going to bring Joe on as we talk about the last instance of insurrection. So, Mr. Producer, there we go. Fresh from his trip to D.C.
Yeah.
Welcome back into town, Joe.
Let's go for the last one, man. I love what you're talking about.
Well, yeah.
I've been sitting here listening going, wow, this is – actually, I've been talking to people on YouTube, but
– Well, this is what – when you hear the left saying this was insurrection and you look through actual American history at what an insurrection was, I mean, this was very tame compared to past insurrections. The last one, before we get into some of what you experienced in D.C., I want to talk about the Bonus Expeditionary Force of 1932. Now, people might know what this is. In 1932, a bunch of out of work, because everyone was out of work at that time in the Depression, out of work veterans marched on Washington, D.C., demanding that they be paid what they were owed. Now, just to explain, put up image 10, Mr. Producer. In 1924, Congress passed a law saying that anyone who served in the First World War, if they served on American soil, would be paid a dollar extra per day. If they served overseas, would be paid $1.25 per day. Basically paying them in lieu of what they would have made if they were working at home. But they added a caveat. They wouldn't start getting the money at the latest until 1945. So in between then and 45, we had the Great Depression. So we had people really, really hurting. Really, really hurting. Put up image 11. This is a picture of a Hooverville that was just outside of Washington, D.C. Just outside of Washington, D.C. These were veterans who had no home, no land, no property, were forced to build these shanty towns, these Hoovervilles, out of any kind of materials they could find. Any kind of materials they could find. They marched on Washington, D.C. They marched on Washington, D.C. Put up image 12. They came from all around the country. All around the country. They marched on D.C. Let's play a little bit of historical footage. Let's go to cut one. We got cut one.
In their last stand at the United States Capitol, the Bonus Army broke through police lines and surged up the steps as they staged a final demonstration, which they hoped would induce the government to pay the cash they demanded. As the huge throng waited on the steps and the plaza, they learned that Congress had adjourned without taking any action. And it left the veterans who were besieging the legislators with nothing to work on. While thousands stood about the entrance to get the latest news, a determined few kept shuffling along on a futile march of protest. A weary patrol around the Capitol, which they maintained for days. All were finally convinced that it was no use, and the crowd soon dispersed without disorder.
So that is archival footage of the news report at the time. These were veterans who had nothing. Middle of the Great Depression, and they had a piece of paper that said the government promised they would pay them, but maybe in a decade or two. And just before we get to Joe, what they did to these people was disgusting. What they put up image 14. They brought in tanks. They brought in tanks. Now, those are little tanks. Those are World War I tanks, but they brought in tanks. Put up image 15. Remember that shanty town I just described to you? They burnt it to the ground. So they took all of what little these people had left. They had nothing. These people had nothing. They were veterans. They had a piece of paper that said they were owed money, but the government wouldn't give it to them. They were living in towns made out of garbage. And the U.S. Army burned it to the ground. Joe, have you ever heard that story?
No, I haven't. But I just wrote it down so I could actually figure out how to get more information on it. Yeah.
So you watch that video of the veterans storming the Capitol. It looks very similar to what we saw on January 6th. People running up the steps of the Capitol to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Yep,
obviously, there are violent people there.
But they didn't have Antifa at the front of it that were actually walking those veterans in, right?
So we cannot make that claim.
We cannot make that
claim. This is why I hope that we would have a meeting before this. We cannot claim that Antifa had anything to do with it. We'll be taken down immediately. This is where we're in a weird position. If we make these claims, we will be immediately taken down and it'll be done. So There's lots of reporting out there, but we can't make that claim. And I know this is going to suck, but I have to make sure that we don't get taken down.
Yeah, so just so you know, Max and I did not talk before this. So I'm gonna tell you guys a little bit about what's happening and what the week was like. I'll take a few minutes to do that. But I want you to understand that there are many people in our country right now who are afraid. They're afraid to speak because they'll be ostracized at their job. They're afraid to put stuff out on videos because they're afraid to be deplatformed. They're afraid to send emails because email service providers will literally, ESPs will strip them of their ability to send emails. They're afraid to put up things on Shopify because Shopify literally, persona non grata, 38,000 people, 38,000 businesses in one day. Apple deplatformed multiple people. Louder Than Crowder made a decision to get off of YouTube. Tim Pool, in the middle of his podcast, was literally shut down. And I'm going to say this, and frankly, it's truth. We are the last free place on this earth. We are it. The last free place where you can actually have an opinion, have dialogue, disagree with someone else. And big tech is taking a place where they are law and order. They are the ones that get to decide what you feel and what you think. They are the ones that get to push their indoctrination into your family. So many of you probably want to know what happened when I was in DC. Where was I? So I'm going to tell you one thing. I was not at the rally. I did speak on Freedom Plaza to 25. Now, I said it was 15 to 20,000. I was correct and said 25 to 30,000 people at Freedom Plaza the night before the Ellipsis Plaza presentation. And I walked through all of the diagrams on how it happened. And you know what I'm talking about with how it happened, and I don't even know if I can talk about how it happened. But over that week, from Monday to Friday, I was able to have conversations with really smart people, Dr. Shiva, a data analyst team, guys that were in the NSA, CIA, guys that received prestigious awards from MIT and other organizations. I was able to have great conversations with lots of really smart people. I was able to see proof.
We can't talk about that, Joe.
And in the back of my mind, I had to scratch my head and go, as I'm looking at all of this stuff, I'm going, how is it that we can't put together a cohesive argument? So I'm going to also tell you what I saw. So first I'll tell you where I was at the rally. At the rally, I was at the State Department. So I was actually in the State Department meeting with leadership. I met with leadership at every level, bar none. So unless you have something compelling, that probably wouldn't happen. So I was able to have those conversations, but it didn't matter because the things that we're experiencing right now with big tech has been going on for quite some time, right? So if you can't get past the media and you can't get past the messaging that's being pushed out there, it doesn't matter how much proof you have. It doesn't matter. And that's the scary part. I think that's what everyone that's on this podcast is probably thinking right now. Like, this is scary stuff. I mean, we're talking about the fact that Max is very, very careful on what he says here. We had someone that worked for our company that lived in China. He actually went back to visit his family in China. He's Chinese. He very, very smart guy, graduated on the tech side. And so we decided we were going to do a podcast with him, and we had to change his name and we had to blur his face because he was deathly afraid of his government. And the tech there did the same thing. He had to use a VPN and then use another VPN to another VPN. Well, what are we facing here? What are we facing here right now? So I don't want to bore you on the details of this, but I'm going to tell you my sacrifice. So when I decided to come forward, I was Joe Otto, right? That was my stage name. I'd come out here for 11 years. I never showed my face because I didn't need to. The idea was, could I develop a platform like Conservative Daily that gave you an opportunity to speak to your leadership, right? And tell them, hey, this isn't right. But I stepped out back in March. Or Max, was it? Actually, I didn't do it in March. I stepped out a little bit in March as Joe Otto. But
you stepped out in November.
I stepped out in November. No, I stepped out before that on video, but it was under Joe Otto, right?
Yeah.
And then in November, I stepped out as Joe Altman. I said, hey, well, giving up my stage name, going right to who I am. And that was a result of information that I uncovered. And then I did all of that, and I've been attacked by the left in ways that I can't even imagine. You can't even imagine. I mean, the things that I've gone through over the last 7 weeks, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. It's absolute evil. It's evil. Personified. But then through all of this, I've always said, listen, courage is more infectious than fear. I'm going to keep doing the things that I need to do. Max has constantly tried to kind of just temper it with, hey, Joe, just I know you're not fearful, but just bring it down a little bit. And I don't want to, right? I want to tell you the truth 100%. I want to be able to tell you everything that I know. But Parler's been taken down now. And the reason why they took Parler down is because 25 million people literally in a 3-day period of time signed up for it. So anyway, I stepped out and I got attacks. My company's got attacked. I got attacked. And the people in the company are pretty resilient people. They're like, hey, Joe, we got your back. You're just talking about truth. And I got sued by Eric Coomer. Right, then I have to have security for my family. And then the mainstream media gave Eric Coomer a free pass. They literally said, hey, let's talk about the fact that this didn't happen.
We can't talk about this.
Hold on a second.
We can't.
So Joe, then we get
they
then we
took
get to,
down Rudy Giuliani because he said the word patriot. We can't talk about this.
I didn't say the word patriot.
I know, but they took down Giuliani. Let me finish. Just because he said the word patriot.
Let me finish. So last week, Max is on the edge of his seat, Paul. And you know, frankly, we're building more technology so that we don't have the fear of this. But he's not wrong, because look at who else has been taken down. So I have to keep it at 40,000 feet until we get everything put in place, which we're doing now. But then we talk about last week. So I wasn't in the fray. I spoke. I did what I thought I had to do. And then came the massive attack. So on Thursday, I was forced to step down from my company. A company that I built. I was forced to step down. That is what the weaponized left has done. Now, we've talked about that, right? But now I get to literally be the recipient of that. And I thought it was best for the company that I stepped down. So I did. But what world are we living in where half of our country, actually probably 70% of our country, because 50% of our country doesn't speak, right? They just don't say anything. They're in fear. Where, you know, 70% of our country is treated like this. It's truth. So they decided that they were going to do everything they can to take away my ability to make a living so that they could quell my voice. So that as I talk to you, you know, it makes it more difficult. The fear of being taken down, not being taken down, but just the threat of being taken down makes us un-American. And that's where we are. The threat of silencing you. And that's that, ladies and gentlemen, is where we are. That's officially where we are as a country. So I am going to ask all of you to do a couple of things. Number one, we're building technology. We're building technology. And Conservative Daily will continue to go on, and we got a bunch of stuff that we're going to launch, and we're working with really smart people, but we need your help. So I will put out a link to actually give to support us. And frankly, we're going to have to raise a lot of money. And I've already been having conversations with billionaires and guys that are worth a lot of money. And I said, listen, they'll contribute too, and we'll get everybody to contribute into this. But if you don't want to be in a position where they can have the threat of oppression then you have to have another option, right? I mean, we're actually having conversations about what happened 100 years ago. Why? Because if I have a conversation about what everything is happening now, we're shut down. They get to silence us like they silence everyone else. And I'm not so sure they won't do it anyway. But that's not the point. That's not the point. So I gotta tell you, we need your help. I need your help. I'm in it. I'm in the fight. Max has been in the fight. But I'm way in the fight. And so if you can help us, great. If you want to contribute to technology that can stop this madness, and I'm not talking just technology like another Facebook. There already is another Facebook. It's Parler. And don't complain to me about Parler and MeWe and Gab and all those being not as sophisticated as Facebook. So what? Our responsibility on those places is to connect, to be together, to have conversations, thought leadership. And by the way, it's not just for conservatives, because when they're done actually silencing conservatives, they'll silence everyone. The ACLU came out and said very, very simply, and this was what, Max? The ACLU came out on Friday?
They said, don't do that.
You cannot do this. But we've seen ineffectual leadership at every level and at every part of our government. It's no longer resistance that happens. It's the ruling class versus us as Americans. We have become slaves. But I've been talking about that for months. This is not something new. I didn't just wake up and say, listen to me. We're all slaves. I've been talking about sharecroppers and slaves for months. Max and I had this dialogue. What was it, Max, back in April?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. But you have to build something that allows you to get. So I'm not talking about just that, not just the Facebook. That already exists. We don't need to run out and say, oh, we're the new Facebook. No, we don't need that. We have people out there that do that. Support them. We need locations that actually have the ability to. We need colo locations. We need to spend millions of dollars building out colo locations so that we can actually house and push out. We need an ISP and ESPs that we can use collectively. We have to, I'm just going to tell you what we have. We have to divest. I divested this morning, significant from any tech company that I thought was censoring speech. It doesn't matter if you agree with me or disagree with me. It doesn't matter. We're very thoughtful on this show. And yeah, I get very, very, very passionate. But I'm passionate about people burning to the ground. I'm passionate about people being persecuted. I'm passionate about the fact that there's a double standard and that we don't talk about cities burning and people getting hurt and killed. I'm passionate about media lying. I'm passionate about those things. I'm passionate about each and every one of you. I'm very passionate. To me, it's a foregone conclusion. Am I already targeted? Yeah, if they targeted my company from inside and they target my company from outside, and I'm forced to leave, where am I? And I'm just one. But that's how you know you're over the target. And I don't even know what the target is. We can't even talk about the target. But the technology that we need is on every front. It's on every front. So I already have an option to replace all the e-commerce people that got kicked off of Shopify. We already have it. We already have a payment processing. We already have that. Again, I'm no longer in the company, but I already have that. I have that capability. You can send us an email, right? You can actually communicate with us, and I will show you how to put you back online if you've been kicked off because you are a conservative. We have those options available. So there's technology we've already built. We already have technology that is AI and machine learning and has powerful capabilities. So I can help companies for that. And if you own a company and you're listening to this message and you need BPO services, which is marketing services, if you need data services, we have all of those. And we will never fire you for having the belief that you have. Heck, we wouldn't fire you if you were a liberal. We wouldn't. We accept you where you are, not where we want you to be. Because that's the magic. That's the magic behind being Americans. I know that there are red states out there and they are turning in their grave right now. Like, what are we experiencing? I know there's talks of secession. There's talk of Insurrection Act. There's talks of all of these things, which frankly are meant to divide and confuse us. We have to start now, right now, by saying we can't just give ourselves false hope. We can't allow them to put out false propaganda everywhere and just believe that, oh, in the last hour, we have to do. We have to stand together and we have to start building and doing. And we have to plan for it a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. We cannot sit here and say, I hope they do it for us. We have to do it. And if we want to have an effect on making sure that we have safe and fair elections, and we want to feel like the integrity is transparent, that we have to ask for it collectively, but not before we start building the technology that's necessary to make sure that we have a voice. See, we rely on the technology that we're trying to run away from. We invest in it. We use it. We're using it now while we think of other ways to get away from that. And all I'm asking you to do right now is be a part of the solution. And stop feeling like the sky is falling, because it's not falling. Is it great right now? No, it's not. It's not great. There are bad things happening right now in our country. The slippery slope, if the left at ACLU is telling us that this is bad, then what I said on Thursday and Friday is absolutely true. After they came for Alex Jones, I said nothing because I wasn't Alex Jones. After they came for Candace Owens, I said nothing because I wasn't Candace Owens. After they came for conservatives, I said nothing because I wasn't a conservative. After they came for me, I looked around. Or after they came for liberals, I said nothing. But after they came for me, I looked around. There's no one left to defend me. No one left to protect me because I didn't plan. We're so busy playing defense that we forget about the fact that offense is the place that we have to play from. Offense. Offense wins games. And they're playing a game. They're running a con on us. I get it. But sitting back and complaining about it, not willing to take personal sacrifice, is never going to get you to a place where you can actually win. So I'm going to put up the thing on Conservative Daily. I'm going to put it on Facebook. I'm going to put it up on YouTube and put it up everywhere. Give. And no, you're not. It's not going for me to get a paycheck, right? I'll be fine. I'll be a little lighter, but I'll be fine. It's so we can actually unselfishly build something. See, I waited a week. I never even talked to anyone about this legal fight that I'm in. I talked about it, but I'm like, I didn't ask anybody for anything. Now we're at the place where we have to be unselfish. And I don't have a job. And I know technology. So here I am at Conservative Daily, which, by the way, is not owned by SMB and is not owned by the data company. It's not owned by it, right? So Eric Coomer's in big trouble. I shouldn't say that. So people are asking how the State Department visit went. Max, you want to talk about that? I think you'd be interested.
No, I have no idea what you can talk about. It. I just don't know what happened. We haven't had a meeting yet. You just got into town.
So maybe out of respect for Max, I think what I'll do is I'll probably have that conversation with him, and we'll pick this up tomorrow. I'll come on tomorrow. I know it's a 2-hour deal. I won't be here.
Well,
for
no, just
the entire 2 hours.
Just do it. Just do it. I mean, we're already on it. I mean, the first hour is gone. So just do it, and we'll pick up when you're done.
So the State Department, I'm going to describe it for you, right? So you walk through you have to go through two different doors. You walk through the State Department doors, and it's on C Street. And you walk in, and you go through these doors, and you go through these hallways. And then as you get down these hallways, you come to an area that is secure, very secure. No phones, no laptops. No, nothing. I mean, it's secure. It's highly secure. Big, big, big doors. It looks like something out of a, I don't know, almost the 1950s. Or if you're me and you've been to other countries, most, and I've been in, you know, presidential palaces. I've been in, I've met with kings and Prime, I've met with all of those people, so I've seen this before, but it's these big columns, old, you know, cherry wood lined pictures of past presidents and people that have served. It's like a big Faraday box with offices. And so I met with some people, and I don't name drop. Yes, I met with pretty much everyone you could think of meeting with. Almost everyone you think of meeting with, I met with when I was in Washington. But when I went to that meeting, what was astonishing to me, and I believe loose lips sink ships, is that I walked through all of this data, all this information, and the astonishment on their face, like, oh my gosh. And I was like, how do you not know this? Like, you guys are at the tip of the spear. You should know all of this stuff. And, you know, the comments that were made after was, look, there's so much false information that gets sent to us that you can't dig through, and you can't get to the real stuff, right? So when you get to the real stuff, frankly, it was in the 12th hour. It's too late, because we have a democratic process that runs through gates. And once you get through that gate, you can't go back through the gate. And frankly, that's what's happened to us as a country. But when he got in the State Department, he had these chairs that were lined up where dignitaries would take a seat. You can't have a camera. You can't have anything else. I couldn't take any pictures, because obviously the pictures are on the cell phone. You couldn't take that. But what was amazing to me was just the, I don't know, it was a surreal experience. Most of the week was surreal. Most of the people I met with, they're very, very nice people. But some of the other things that I experienced while I was there was, sans the State Department. Like, State Department, it was great. Those were great meetings, very professional, awesome people. Someone that I don't even want to mention who I met with, because I don't have clearance to do that. I haven't been cleared to do that. But the other people that I met with, again, very nice people. But I'm going to tell you that overall, not the people that I was with, but the people that we had opportunities to meet with and engage with, overall, you got a feeling of chaos. You got a feeling of thirst for power, thirst for authority, thirst for being right, thirst for, I heard a story that someone tried to sell information to the newsrooms that could have had a massive impact. If we did it earlier on, could have had a massive impact on the election, the results. But they wanted to sell it. It wasn't, and that's, I experienced that pretty much every single day. I couldn't believe my eyes, Max. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I was experiencing. I couldn't believe some of the, it just seemed, you know, and I didn't go to sleep till 3 o'clock in the morning. And it's not because I was out drinking or doing anything like that. I wasn't doing any of that. I was working from 6 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the morning, getting back up, doing the same thing all over again. But it was crazy. When they talk about the inside the Beltway being a swamp, it's a swamp. There's no question. It's a swamp. There's a lot of bad stuff that goes on in that area. And frankly, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy that it's crazy about the word patriot being banned for, you know, that now they want to say it's violence. It's crazy that they're, you know, now saying that if you support President Trump, we have a right to come after you. I mean, that's Nazi Germany, ladies and gentlemen. And we already know that BLM came out and said, we're Marxist. They did. The leadership in BLM, we're Marxist. The leadership in Antifa is like, we're communist. We all come together. We want to destroy everything America. Done a pretty good job. Now, we can stop it. We can still stop it. But you have to be able to talk with two things. One, your talents and abilities. You have to give it up for free. So if you're a coder, if you're someone that can help, great. Or you have to financially support the ability to get it done. Now, I've proven over 8 years that I could take something from a cocktail napkin to very, very successful. And then very quickly, they took it away from me. They didn't take the company away from me. Well, they did take. Yeah, they did, actually. Now we have to build tech from the ground up, from cradle to grave, on how we protect 70% of America. Because they're coming for you. They're coming for me. They're coming for all of us. And frankly, we've got to start playing offense. So, Max, it's, somebody just said it's very demonic in D.C. I want you to know something. I prayed more and had more thoughtful prayer with people, believers, than I think I ever have. I mean, there is evil all over DC, no question. But just the amount of faith, right? The only two things that we can do right now to help God, like God is at the wheel, he's in the middle of it. And I don't want to turn this into a all about God, but it is about God. But the two things that I want to just press on you is faith and action. Those are the two things that actually get us out of this. And if you don't think that the far left, because take classical liberals, they're out of the equation. They are just like us. They are next on their list. But the far, they're afraid of us. You know why? Because we have faith. And they don't believe in Christ. They don't believe in God. They don't. They have no faith. They die, they turn into dirt. So they can do whatever they want. They have no conscience. So for us, we have to just remember that God is at the wheel. He's always at the wheel. Invite him to the party. Put him back in our communities. Start building schools so that we can actually just play offense, not defense, offense. Build tech. Teach our kids that this is not right. And stop relying on others to teach our kids. And stop feeding your kids Ritalin and all these other things that they put them on. I mean, I think it's crazy. Well, I mean, that's my opinion. I'm telling you what my opinion is. That's my opinion, right? And you're right. The conservatives, Zach, could have taken the 230 protections. They could have. They could have stopped this from happening. But then they complained about it right afterwards. So you have a choice. Choice is really simple. You have to decide what the choice is. You have to. Are you willing to give up your time, effort, sacrifice there, or are you willing to invest in something that can actually work? And not only do you have to invest in it and you have to do that, but you have to go find other people that can actually do it as well. You have to be the army of one that goes and gets the army of 1,000. And it doesn't mean military army. It just means people that are willing to contribute what I just said. Right? That's all I'm asking for. All I'm asking for right now is that you actually participate in this. Yeah. So we'll be posting.
Sorry, go ahead.
We'll be posting the. Do we just go right into the second hour? Is that what we do?
Well, we have a hard break coming up in literally seconds.
Yeah.
And you can hear the music in the background. A hard break, and then we'll go into the second hour after the break. So second hour of the break, second hour of the show, we're talking about big tech. So make sure you don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Ronald Reagan famously said that our freedoms are never more than a generation away from extinction. Conservative Daily exists to make sure that never happens. With our community of 700,000 members, we fight every day to hold Congress's feet to the fire and stop them from surrendering our rights and freedoms. The fight to take this country back is not over. Please join our movement right now by going to conservative-daily.com and clicking the subscribe button to sign up for our free call to action newsletters. We have a chance to save this country, but only if we all work together. Again, this is conservative-daily.com, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button at the top.